At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. So skip replacing every carb with cauliflower and indulge in your breakfast, lunch, and dinnertime favorites while still hitting your goals. From breakfast bagels and meal-prepped enchiladas to mouth-watering burgers and cheesy noodles, you won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.CO. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on Hero.co for more information.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
This posits two separate ideas, the way I interpret it. The first is the Commonwealth says it needs more audio because the redacted audio provided thus far either contains no damaging omissions by Reed. The audio provided thus far contains many damaging admissions to Reed. In her first interview with Gretchen Voss, she talks about when she dropped John off and where she dropped him off. It's noticeable in many, many interviews, the story changes. But at one point, she has them going to the side door of the house. In fact, in three of the interviews, he's going to the side door of the house. In a further interview, she says he went to the front door of the house. It's not subtle. There's a reason. The stories and the versions given by Ms. Reed evolve in time. Coincidentally, they evolve sometimes with the production of Discovery. And so I am not suggesting for a second that there are no damaging statements by Ms. Reed. In fact, there are confessions, there are admissions, and there are contradictions based on later statements given. And so all I can simply say is that is not the Commonwealth's position. That is stated wrongly. Also, or it reveals that she was not entirely forthright in her unsworn press interviews with Voss. Well, we're entitled to take her statements with Ms. Voss and compare them to all the other statements she made, 2020, Vanity Fair, Dateline, and others. And so the question isn't whether her statement to Voss or Ms. Voss is accurate. It is in comparison to other statements. Is it accurate? And we know that it's not. There are many instances where she has given different statements between versions. Also internally, in Ms. Voss's interview, as I mentioned, there are statements, redaction, a return, and a different statement. For example, she was only sipping at the waterfall, which would suggest further drinking. And then after a redaction interruption, she's sipping water. Sipping water at the waterfall, as incredulous as that may be. And so clearly something happened during that redaction that changed the admission to drinking alcohol, which is part of this case, to something of water. I think that the claim in this motion really has no relevance to the analysis. It's not on point. The reason I said there was a two-hour interview, and I'll accept that I'm wrong, is when I listened to the FTR tape, counsel respectfully said it was a two-hour interview. And that's where I got my information from, not Ms. Voss's affidavit. So it may have been a one-hour interview, which still leaves us with one-third of the interview, two-thirds redacted. That is significant. The Commonwealth comes back, we're entitled to come back when we want, if we have a good faith basis and if the court invites us. We come back now after I've had a chance to actually listen to the 4 hours of interview, or you add them up, 3 hours and 40 minutes of interview. I've studied them, I've listened to them many times. I've ordered transcripts, I've perused the transcripts, I've compared the two. I've compared them to all the other statements. So time has now made these much more relevant than they maybe initially thought. I can't speak for the Commonwealth at that point. We're entitled to the full force of our proof. We don't have to just take some. We don't have to take a fraction. Just because it's inconvenient or uncomfortable for parties, the government is entitled to the full force of their proof. And representing the people of this Commonwealth, I am pursuing the full force of our proof in every aspect because we're entitled to it. It is notable in the FTR hearing that counsel for Ms. Voss and for the publication said that the third interview they discussed, and the parties, meaning the defense attorneys, the defendant, and Ms. Voss, could decide to use that material. It wasn't that it was precluded or no one could ever see it. It's only if it helped them. And so he said that they agreed that if they wanted to, they could use that material. They just decided not to. Because they decided not to use incriminating information in their story doesn't give them the power to decide who does and when they do. So we're entitled to the full force of our proof, and we're going to pursue it. We're entitled to all of these records, all this information. There is no legal argument against it, none.
All right. Thank you. So I know, Ms. Little, I asked if you wanted to say anything. I just give you that opportunity. Was there anything you wanted to add?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. So that is taken under advisement. And now we have three more motions. I understand Mr. Albano is here, who will be filing an appearance on all three or arguing all three. But so, Mr. Albano, you can come forward, sir. And Mr. Brennan, do you want to argue each one of these individually? It appears I did get an opposition this morning that goes to service, which pertains to all three. But do you have different arguments, a little bit different on each?
I do.
Okay. So, Mr. Albano, do you want to be heard after each argument, or do you want to just be heard at the end of the three? There are three motions. FXT TV, Boston 25, WCVB TV, Hearst Television Incorporated, and ABC, and NBC 10 Boston. Okay, thank you. And again, on these, Ms. Little, you don't expect to argue?
No.
Okay. If you do change your mind, just stand up and let me know. No, that's fine. Okay. All right, I will hear you. Why don't we start with the FXT TV, Boston 25. It's paper number 400.
As has been discussed, Fox 25 and its employees conducted an interview of William and Janet Reed. I've quoted on subsection 5 some of the language from that interview. And during my quote, it says, during your first discussion with Karen. It should say, during your first discussions with Karen. There's an S left off. Nevertheless, during your first discussions with Karen, did you believe she may have hit John?
Did she believe?
Yes.
Okay, I thought you said, did you believe?
Then I misspoke. My apologies. Did she believe she may have hit John? William Reed responded, no, no, she felt she struck something. She said, Dad, I think I struck something. I said, what do you mean, right? This was in the hospital, right? She says, I remember, all right, backing up and hitting something. I've had the benefit of at least looking at the phone records that are available for Karen Reed and seeing there was a phone conversation that morning to William Reed's phone. That phone conversation is before Karen Reed is admitted to the hospital. And so it is, by inference, in the back of a police car at the scene. Now, there's some ambiguity during your first discussions. The operative word, as I see it, is first. It is a particularly remarkable statement to make that in the throes of realizing the great tragedy that's unfolding with John O'Keefe lying in the snow dying, that the comment of thinking that they hit, supposedly now, another car in a driveway hours earlier would be the topic of conversation at that point. There is not a fair inference that that would be the subject matter. It is not a fair conclusion that a person would be so fixated on a mere nudging of another car that caused no damage hours earlier when we're dealing with the potential loss of life. And so I think it is reasonable to infer that that was actually not the complete statement. The conversation lasted on that morning for over a minute, and there was certainly conversations after. And so the defendant's father has, as he's entitled to, utilized media to try to sell a story to help his daughter. And during that airing, it is clear and obvious that not the entire conversation with William Reed has been provided. During these stories, oftentimes, there is summaries to progress the episode much quicker. And so all of his statements, which may not be a lot, but all the statements to that employee of Fox 25 who did the interview should be discoverable so that this statement can be put into context. Some of the doctrine of completeness. We should know what the entirety of the conversation interview was so that we can assess this statement and draw the proper inferences from it. It is expected that William Reed very likely will be a witness at trial. He will be asked about this conversation. He may be asked about what else he had said. It will be impossible at trial then to try to produce the other statements that he has made to this network or this employee. And so the Commonwealth or anybody who would be questioning him would be just simply left to the whim of his answer. And I'm not satisfied to do that. I do not think there is any protection. He is not a defendant. There is no privilege. And so there is no reason to protect this information so that it can fairly be brought into context so that when he is cross-examined, if there is evidence of impeachment or corroboration, that both sides are aware and know of the substance of that material. And that is the reason we request the pleading in number 400 for the Fox 25 footage that was not aired.
Okay. Have you had a chance to read Mr. Albano's opposition this morning? It's not very long.
I haven't, but I can say Mr. Albano kindly called me. He outlined the issues in an email. He made this a much more streamlined and agreeable process. And so I credit him with his effort. I don't need to read his response. I'll appreciate what he says.
Okay.
My short interaction with him, his total candor, I have no hesitation what he says in his representations. I might disagree, but I don't need to read his pleading.
Okay.
There are two, NBC and ABC. Your Honor would allow me to start with NBC because I think we can streamline that. NBC 10 has agreed to give promo materials in their possession. I've not only spoke to Mr. Albano, but I've spoke to the attorney for the subsidiaries that we also had subpoenaed. And they told me that as subsidiaries, they do not have possession of the materials of the parent company. and I received letters from the attorneys stating as much. So as it pertains to MBC 10, the position is that one of the subsidiaries is going to send us promotional materials. And as far as service on the parent company, I don't think the Commonwealth succeeded, despite the fact that we made numerous efforts in hand mail UPS to a number of subsidiaries. I don't think we satisfied, so I do not want to ask the court to progress that.
Okay. Do you have a timeline on when you'll get this material?
The promotional materials?
Yes.
They said they were putting them together. I did not ask for a timeline.
Okay.
The promotional materials are a very small fragment. It's I've only seen one clip aired. I don't know what else they have, but it should not take them long.
Okay. I don't have a paper number. Jim, do you have the paper number on NBC 10? Here, just, you know what, Jim, you can give it to me after. I don't have that paper number or the other one. All right, so do you want to
427, Your Honor.
What is 427?
427, yes.
All right, so do you want to move on to CBB TV?
Yes.
Okay.
WCVB TV has been served, and they've notified that they're not in possession of the materials, have no control over the parent company, and they are not part of the company. And so I no longer am asking WCVB TV to produce these materials. Instead, in the alternative, we have subpoenaed the registered agent in Massachusetts, the registered agent for the parent company. They have been properly served. If we look at the Secretary of Commonwealth of Massachusetts Business Entity Summary website, not only do they have a principal place of business in New York, but they also have, as a registered agent, a local address, 84 State Street. So our position relative to the ABC materials is that ABC has been properly served locally. Unlike NBC, that did not have a local registered agent that we could find, or perhaps does not have one, ABC does. ABC does business in Massachusetts. In fact, these interviews with Ms. Reed may have taken place in Massachusetts. I don't know. But they have roots in Massachusetts in that they do business here. They have a local registered agent. And the reason to have a registered agent is to accept service, provide notice in cases of objections, and to provide materials. It is done routinely in civil cases when a registered agent is notified. They are then obligated to get materials even if the REM exists in a different place. Their position is that the REM exists in New York. That is irrelevant to the assessment in this case. To suggest that somehow the physical property being another jurisdiction is not in the control or purview of the local registered agent would just be enacting a shell game where local or companies could pick jurisdictions they find most favorable, do business in outside jurisdictions, and avoid the consequences of that. That, I don't believe, is how the law is set up. As a registered agent, they are the same as the company. They just have a local contact to accept all types of service, communications, and responsibility. And so our position on ABC as far as service is concerned is they've been served through the registered agent, and therefore whatever materials exist, regardless if they're in Massachusetts or in New York, they are required to obtain them and they're required to produce them.
Okay, so Mr. Albano disagrees with you, and on the third page of his memo under paragraph 5, so I will give you the opportunity to read that.
Okay.
Under that fifth paragraph. Do you want to address the substance of your motion regarding ABC?
I do. Much like other recorded statements, we see from the Nightline in the 2020 interviews, there are a number of public statements that Ms. Reed has made to a national audience that don't reconcile with other statements she has made at other times. I've given you one, the example of not knowing which door she supposedly saw John Keefe go into. There is differences in her stories and versions about where she was that night after she left the O'Keefe house. There is a number of examples where the different versions given contradict each other. And so although they're all substantive statements, they're all admissions and confessions, they still have a value in the fact that they contradict each other. And so the episode that is aired on 2020 and Nightline, you hear oftentimes the author of the story, not even the interview, the author saying, and we spoke to the person, and then this is what happened, and then they go to a clip of an actual interview. The summary by the author is not admissible. It can't be used substantively. It can't be used to impeach Ms. Reed should she testify. It is hearsay. It's inadmissible. And so these summaries have a genesis somewhere. There's a reason why the reporter is asking certain questions, or more importantly, the author is summarizing testimony, oftentimes inconsistent with other versions. And so that means that there is footage from which the author has gleaned this information. There's either footage or there's a conversation with Ms. Reed. And so those are statements, not unsimilar to or dissimilar to Ms. Voss interviewing here. Those are statements of a defendant which are substantive evidence for their full value. And so that footage we're entitled to see. There's nothing that should protect it. We should have the opportunity to review all of the statements and also put the ones in context that were broadcast to the nation. And that's the substance of why we want it. I'll have to take a moment to look at the response.
Okay. Mr. Albano, we'll give him a couple of minutes just to read it. Sure. Jim, does this have a docket number yet? Paragraph 5, it's on page 3. The pages aren't numbered. Actually, you should start at 4. Or why don't you read the whole thing, Mr. Byrne? Why don't you have a seat and read it?
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Paul, do you want me to step off or stay here? We'll stay here.
May I?
Sure.
Thank you. Your Honor, our position is we disagree with that proposition. We are not trying to subpoena an out-of-state witness. We're trying to subpoena materials from a company, and although the company has a principal place of business in another state, by having a registered agent, we believe that gives us jurisdiction. I can understand the company would like to remove this to New York. There is a reporter's privilege in New York that is profound. It is not so in Massachusetts. In Massachusetts, there is none. And so I see why it is the company's preference for us to go to New York, to use New York law, but I don't believe that's the case. I believe as a registered agent that we have an entitlement to subpoena them here and we follow Massachusetts law. There are a couple of cases in the memorandum that I'm not aware of. I think it would be prudent for me to research and shepherdize, and because I think I have an obligation to do that. I would ask you to allow me to have a day to provide a brief supplement. It's not to re-argue the case or the merits of the case, but if there is adverse case law, I want to recognize and acknowledge it. but not...
I'll give you that opportunity, but I will hear from Mr. Albano today since he's
here. Of course. But our position is, although they would like us to go to New York, we can subpoena in Massachusetts to the registered agent, and that entitles us to the material, so that's the way we've done it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Albano.
Thank you, Your Honor. The two cases I cited, just to be clear, they address the Uniform Act, which Your Honor dealt with last year. They don't address the specific issue the Commonwealth has raised, which is, okay, you have a registered agent, we serve the registered agent, does that trump the Uniform Act? I did not find a case that dealt directly or even indirectly with that. But here's why I believe the service issue does not override the Uniform Act. First of all, we're dealing with a statute. Statute talks about a witness in another state. There's no dispute that ABC is a foreign corporation with a principal place of business in New York. Now, the analogous areas I thought of was, okay, let's say someone wanted to sue ABC in this court. Yes, they could serve them through their registered agent, but that wouldn't change the domicile or citizenship of ABC. If there were a diverse plaintiff and a diverse defendant, it would still be removable. It doesn't make them residents of Massachusetts. Or, for example, subject to taxes in Massachusetts. It's simply a way to make service of process, but the plain language of the Uniform Act and the policy underlying it is not overridden by service. The two cases that I did cite, one is the grand jury case Rhode Island, SJC case. And that just generally explains how this Uniform Act works. You go to the Superior Court here, you get an order, you travel to New York, and New York decides whether the subpoena will issue. The second case, which I think was in re contempt or something like that, was the SJC saying, by the way, the receiving court, and in that case, Massachusetts was the receiving court, we don't just rubber stamp these if there's a privilege issue in our state. And so that's what tells us that if this court issues us an order under the Uniform Act, Commonwealth travels to New York, the New York court then decides, does it enforce it, or does the privilege that exists in New York, is that privilege dispositive? And that's what we say is the right answer here, that yeah, they have a point, they can make service, but it doesn't override the statutory requirements of the Uniform Act. And as to the other, I think things are pretty much under control with the other motions. WBTS, which is NBC10, has previously published those promotion ads for the show, and they say, well, no, they've already been out. Fine, we'll get you copies, and that's what I've been told by the client as well. WFXT, which unlike ABC, is here. Does have some raw footage. The station's position is that if Your Honor decides under the Rule 17 standard that yes, this footage is relevant enough to come within the Rule 17 scope, then WFXT will produce that information. I do expect it will already be published before, so the unpublished I do expect won't be unpublished anymore, so they'll probably be in a position where they're simply turning over published information,
okay.
not unpublished information, but I do think that. So I think WBTS and WFXT are effectively resolved.
Okay. Do you want to respond, Mr. Moran? Thank you, Mr. Albano.
I'd just like to give one example that I'm sure you've thought of, and we see it often in tort law. If U-Haul is a foreign company, I don't know where it's located, but if the principal place of business is in Texas, and there's an accident here in Massachusetts, and I'm requesting as part of my litigation corporate materials, I do not have to follow the Uniform Act to go to Texas or litigate in Texas under Texas law. Because the company operates also in Massachusetts, as does ABC, I can sue in Massachusetts, and that company, this registered agent, is obligated to get those materials for me. Otherwise, a company could simply hide in whatever state is most beneficial to them, make it impossible to litigate or obtain materials, and there would be subterfuge throughout the entire process. They have we have jurisdiction here because they operate here, because they have a registered agent here. It does not matter where their corporate or their headquarters is. Thank you.
All right, any follow-up, Mr. Albano? Sure.
My first point is that we're dealing with a statute here, and the statute says this is how it works when you have an out-of-state witness in a criminal case. So that's different than civil discovery. The second thing I'd say is ABC has a registered agent here, but WCVB is owned and operated by Hearst Corporation. Hearst Corporation is totally separate from ABC. That's why neither of them could produce the documents in this case. I just want to be clear that the presence of an ABC affiliate here, owned by an entirely separate company, Hearst, does not mean that ABC is here in Massachusetts. They're a foreign company that has an agent for service process. They don't have offices and the like here in Massachusetts. Are they doing business here in the sense of transmitting ABC news programs through affiliates? I don't argue that. What I'm arguing is there's not the service, the fact that they're subject to service does not override the requirements of the statute.
Is there a distinction between obtaining records and obtaining a person's presence to testify?
The SJC has said in the grand jury case, the first case I cited, that the same procedures apply for documents as for witnesses.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So those are all the Rule 17 motions we have. Am I missing anything? Those are all the Rule 17 motions. All right, so we have some housekeeping matters that I just wanted to check on. I still have the motion to continue under advisement. I need to see how we progress for a bit. The Commonwealth's notice regarding the testing of the telematics system, where do we stand with that, Mr. Brennan? I know you had said you told them that in Thanksgiving rather than Christmas to highlight big holidays, but where are we?
I did, and if I could have done it, had it done quicker, I would have got somebody else. I have spoken to my expert numerous times. He has coordinated with the defense expert. They are heading to Texas on December 2nd.
Okay.
On December 2nd, they are going to test all of the chips, and there's an SD card that we expect has information on it. And then they're both scheduled to travel back to Massachusetts for December 5th.
Okay.
And they're going to do what's called a chip-on, where they take the chips, the SD card, they reapply it to the boards, they put it back in the modules, and they put it in the actual car because there's different software which will give it even a more fulsome reading. And so after the December 5th event is done, I've asked my expert if I could have all results within a week. I have an uncertain response. Promise to do his best, which really doesn't give a lot of meaning, but my hope is within 7 to 10 days.
Okay, thank you. And I don't know, Ms. Little or Mr. Jackson, if you have the answer to this, the transcripts of the sidebar conferences, Ms. Little, do you have any scheduling idea on when those will be available?
Yes, Your Honor, I do believe that Mr. Jackson had spoken with the court reporter and emailed the clerk's office with an update. It's going to be a little bit longer than initially expected. One of the reporters had sort of like a family emergency and needed some additional time. And so I believe, and I'll have Mr. Jackson correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe she needed until about 6 weeks to get the sidebar conference.
6 weeks from the November 13th date?
6 weeks from about a week after the November 13th date.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Jackson, did you want to speak?
Your Honor, Ms. Little addressed the court's specific questions about the transcripts, and that's as accurate as a bit of information as I have, so I'll submit on that.
All right. Thank you. All right, that is it for today. The Commonwealth is going to file a response to the discovery of communications and possession, custody, and control of the Commonwealth by 11:27, right?
Yes. Your Honor, I provided the defense this morning with a response to their motion. We'll file it with the court. It is a request that they made that is very labor and time consuming, but a very important task that I've been involved with. I spend many, many hours and I need many more. We do have, or I have produced, or I have a production that I'd like to produce to the defense. I've shown them a protective order this morning to see if they were agreeable. I do not want to speak for them. If there is a protective order, I can turn over the first production that I've produced, and there is more to come.
All right, any objection to the protective order? I have not seen this document, obviously, nor the proposed order.
Right, there are a couple of issues related to this motion in addition to the protective order that I'd like to address with the court that I've briefly discussed with Mr. Brennan.
All right, I haven't read this yet, so I won't know what you're talking about, Mr. Brennan.
So I believe you have read our motion, right? The motion that
I read your motion, I haven't.
Right, so it's just in relation to the motion, Judge.
All right.
Your Honor, generally speaking, we do not have an objection to a protective order as long as it is issued without prejudice, which I believe Mr. Brennan is in agreement with.
All right, is there one here? Or was there a proposed protective order?
I have it right here, Your Honor. Mr. Brennan printed this to us this morning.
Yeah.
So I have not reviewed that, Your Honor, but I'm asking that the contents be allowed to be shared with the entire defense team, including our attorneys, our interns, and our client. I don't believe Mr. Brennan has an objection to that, but that would be our request with regard to the protective order, with the understanding that we could come back before the court and revisit that if we deem it appropriate.
Is there any objection to the sharing with?
There's no objection to the parties they would like to share it with, and I understand it's without prejudice.
Okay.
Yes, and with regard to the motion itself, Your Honor, you know, I had come prepared with an argument for the allowance of the motion. Given Mr. Brennan's, you know, the work that he's done in terms of trying to gather this material and you know, get it to us along with the protective order, I assume that there's no general objection to the motion, so I don't need to be heard in that regard. Assuming the court would allow the motion. But I would raise an issue for the court, actually two issues. One is that we were informed this morning that Mr. Brennan has gone through Mr. Morrissey's cell phone. Apparently there is one work cell phone and one personal cell phone. Obviously the personal cell phone becomes relevant because he used the personal email address to make an ex parte communication with the court. One concern that we have is that we were told this morning that with regard to Mr. Morrissey's text messages, not the emails, but text messages, apparently they're somehow remarkably set to auto-delete after 30 days. That obviously raises some questions for us, maybe the subject of a future motion, but more immediately, the concern is every day that passes, we're losing text messages from 30 days prior. So, you know, through today, I believe.
They've been preserved, Mr. Brennan?
I've been preserving them since I started the task last week. I'll continue to preserve them.
All right, so that...
Yes, that deals with that issue. So the only remaining issue, Your Honor, is with regard to the searches that Mr. Brennan ordered conducted or conducted himself, he had searched for all emails sent from Michael Morrissey's iCloud personal email to any emails that had a J-U-D in the suffix of the email address.
Okay. The significance of that is?
The significance is that would supposedly capture any ex parte communications with members of the judiciary or the clerk's office, and I appreciate that effort. However, we think it's, we assert that it's insufficient. We believe that searches should be done of his iCloud email for the name Reed, spelled R-E-A-D correctly, or Reed, R-E-E-D, which is how Mr. Morrissey typed it in his ex parte communication with the court. We don't know if he did that for the purpose of avoiding a FOIA request or if he just misspelled my client's name, but we believe there should be a search for both of those spellings. And in addition, we also believe there should be a search of his email address, the personal email address, for the names of the relevant witnesses, and we can give the court a list, for the names of all judges who have sat on this case in terms of, you know, is there an attempt to communicate with a judge on some type of personal email account, like he used a personal email account. And then also we believe there should be a search for any clerk's office employees for the same reason, both at Stoughton District Court where this case originated and this court as well. We have obviously reason not to trust Mr. Morrissey in light of his actions using this personal email account to make an ex parte communication, and we'd ask that a more thorough search be done for these types of communications.
All right, so why don't you continue to talk with Mr. Brennan and we can have a hearing on this motion if there's anything that you still need on December 12th when we're back here for the Daubert hearing.
That's fair enough. Thank you, Your
Honor. Does that make sense, Mr. Brennan?
It does. I've taken extensive steps to do this myself to accommodate the defense in the most broadest fashion, and I'll continue to do that. If they want to discuss how I can accommodate them, I'll do my best.
Okay. All right. So we will see everyone December 12th. So when do you expect to get me any written material you want me to have prior to the Daubert hearing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Your Honor, we drafted a landing and hearing motion. I need to review it. I'd like to get it to you by the end of the week. That's
great. I expect to be here by the at the end of the week. So that's great.
Thank you.
And your response by next week, Ms. Giannetti? Ms. Little?
Has it difficulty to respond to anything?
Yes, if we could have at least a week, Your Honor.
Okay. So I'll give you 10 days?
Thank you.
As long as that gets me before the 12th.
No problem.
All right.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, if I can get it as soon as you can get it. All right. Anything else? Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
May I inquire if the protective order is going to be signed by the defense?
Are you going to sign the protective order, Mr. Giannetti?
I expect I will, without prejudice.
I have the materials. I'll just wait.
Okay. All right. So if you sign it, then I'll endorse it, Ms. Giannetti. You had it, right? Ms. Little gave it to us just now?
I believe we just gave our copy to the court.
Yes.
All right. So this is the one that needs to be signed, and I'll endorse it. You can. Do you want to take a look at it?
Yes.
Mr. Brennan, I know you have an electronic signature. I'd like you to sign this as well since you're here.
Yes, Your Honor.
You sign that and I will endorse it.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you. No, thank you, Your Honor.
No, thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you, and I appreciate counsel and the third-party record holders coming in today.
12:12, 9 a.m.
All rise to
the floor, please. You are muted.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.